You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Lynn Thompson. Lynn, thanks so much for being with me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Lynn, we're going to talk about fretwork, I imagine, because I know you're reading from that a few times during this talk, but what is it that you're working on now? And I imagine it's a number of things.
Well, fretwork was published in February of this year, 2019, but there were several poems that did not make it into the collection. So I'm now going back over those to see, do I have another collection? How do I want to shape that? How do the poems relate or not relate to each other? So I literally am looking at a new collection at some point, probably next year, to start thinking about publishing.
I like that. So, I mean, let's talk about collecting poems. So, because that's an interesting way to approach it, too. So some weren't published in this series where, you know, the publisher or editor said, you know, that doesn't fit or something. And so then that makes you begin a whole new way of thinking about a collection, because you're the one assembling the collection. And that's always interesting to me, because some poems are written with a collection in mind, others are not written that way at all, right? They're collected afterwards.
Right. So in this case, I think over time, fretwork started to tell me what it thought it was about, and I started thinking about the poems that applied to those themes. But that meant that there were other poems. You know, you're constantly in a state of writing, at least I am, and many of the other poems didn't fit that theme. And so now, rather than having a situation where fretwork told me what it wanted to be, I'm thinking more deliberately about how I want these poems to work together, and even within that, because there's several of them, they wouldn't all arguably be in one collection. So I think I'm thinking about it in a more proactive way than when I put together the collection for fretwork.
Okay, that's very interesting. I'm going to ask you more about that. So you're looking at a few of the poems that weren't in there, and when you talk about using them in a proactive way, you're imagining what is the thread in those poems that will pull together others. Or
correct.
You're looking. Oh, okay. So
right. For example, I've given them begun to give them categories such as wordplay, political poems, feminist poems, poems that deal with race, poems that deal with life and death, poems that deal with geography, and seeing where there may be crossover or not crossover among them.
I see. Okay, very interesting. And is there anything else you're working on now that you want to mention? Any other projects that are related or unrelated to this?
Yes, I'm trying to finish an essay actually for Marsh Hawk Press, which is the press that published Fretwork. And their request is for its writers to submit an essay of about 4,000 to 5,000 words talking about the way they came to poetry. So I'm a good way through it. I'm trying to finish it up so that they can publish it on their website.
Wow, that's a good sized essay. So so the way you came to poetry, which means how you began to consider yourself a poet or began to actually write poetry, what's your, if I can ask about that, what's your...
Right, I think they're open to any way you want to approach it. And what I've done I've written some of it and presented some of it at AWP last month, or it seems longer than that, but last month, and really talking about the impact my father had on my love of language and his love of poetry, leading to my love of poetry. And so it really comes out of a lot of what I discuss in Fretwork, so it works together really well.
So I know you're going to read from Fretwork shortly, but I would like to ask you a little bit about your father's sense of language, because that's so interesting. My mother influenced me that way as well. Can you tell me a little bit about that, or perhaps one memory of your father's use of or to reference to language that influenced you?
Well, my parents are Caribbean, or were, they're both passed away now, but were immigrants from the West Indies at a time when the islands they came from were still colonies of England. And so they received a what they called a British education, as opposed to the education that American students receive. And my father was a little disparaging. He thought that American students were lazy and weren't as strict about their learning as he had been raised to be. So he was very particular about the words that we used. I remember him refusing to allow us to use slang, because he just felt that that was not the King's English, and I referenced that in one of the poems in Fretwork. He thought that was not speaking properly. So I became very interested in words and how they sounded and what they meant at a very early age by virtue of his influence.
Yeah, that's interesting to not use slang.
I remember once in the vernacular of the day, I was saying that something was boss, and he turned to me very disdainfully and said, "Are you referring to someone's employer?" Okay. So that gives you a little bit of a feeling of where he was coming from.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, my mother was an educator and, you know, read to me at bedtime, early childhood specialist, and so, you know, I had this kind of curious upbringing, and she always read to me, but often read poems, and poems that were, for me, difficult sometimes and very memorable. And the one I remember most was her reading to me Langston Hughes. I think the poem was "Life Ain't No Crystal Stair."
Right.
And I remember as a kid still thinking, like, oh my God, you know, I don't know, you know, upsetting, and, you know, what does it mean? And we talked about that a lot. And that, yeah, that
right, that's quite a poem to start a child off with.
Well, she already had my attention after a little while, but that was one that really, stayed with me for
stayed
a long
with
time.
You.
Yeah. It still does. So let's hear from Fretwork. What is the first poem you're reading?
The first poem I'm going to read is called Genesis, and it's a little bit of the history and motivation of my father immigrating from St. Vincent, which is the island in the Caribbean that he was from. Genesis 1. On 27 March 1899, Dora rose from her pallet, came to squat, and my father flopped out like a fish. 1 month later, American Negroes fasted in protest of the lynch laws. But Daddy, born to got nothing in a British colony, took off nonetheless, and despite everything, all gurgle and shit, a wheel turning, his eyes fixed, history nascent. 2. I left that floating hotel, the Van Dyke, to arrive via Barbados on the Isle of Tears, June 1923, and I didn't care what. We'd heard the news back home about a black man, Sam Hose, lynched for killing his Georgia white employer. Hose was burned alive, knuckles put up for sale, and that'll teach him, at the local grocer's, but I came anyway. The journey of not knowing isn't bitter or a sweet seed, just chance. I came for 4 years to earn money teaching grammar and numerals the way I taught grammar and numerals to youngsters back home, knowing few black boys in the States were allowed to attend school, not knowing if any school would hire me. The twins, color and cry, steal each other's breath, yet they grow under heaven. I came despite the rebellions, the Robert Charles riots, 1900, 28 dead, the Wilmington insurrection, no official death count, Springfield, 1908, Houston, 1917, District of Columbia, 1919, and all the unnamed revolutions every year since and in between. Time's a magician, sleight of hand, and a white mask. Black fingers, unbound. 3. When I said, I will come back, Dora shook her head and sobbed. I came anyway.
Thank you. And it's so beautiful and, of course, so upsetting. So tell me a little bit about this in the context of the book and the next one that you're going to read. That sets the tone, in a sense, for this collection?
It really does. It comes very early in the collection, which generally is about family, but is specifically about both my birth parents and my Caribbean parents, who were my adopted parents and who raised me. So early on, I'm trying to say that despite the difficulty that you can anticipate any immigrant may feel coming to another country and knowing what's going on in that country, that they're determined to come anyway because they think there's something that's valuable to them when they get to this new country. And relative to the poem that I'm going to read, that poem deals with my father trying to establish himself in this new culture.
Okay. So, yes, please read the next one.
This is called Virgil Avenue and Other Geographies. 1. It was a beginning like any other, which isn't quite the way it was. With beginnings, where to start? The house that was my first was a house that Daddy brought to Virgil atop a flatbed truck. He made his boys fix it to the foundation, then do whatever else was needed to create a kind of permanence. I wasn't there then. Then I was, driving Daddy through the old neighborhood where the house was, as memories tend to be, smaller than he remembered. 2. I was part of his vision of a wind-whipped Schwinn, part getaway, part stay put, all pout and tough rules, Dragnet and Jack Benny. But I had a mind, and I began to pursue the life of it, only half present, only vaguely aware of something beyond presence. Of those years, I recall a boy, Henry, not as I knew him then, but the way I knew him when I was never to see him again, realizing too late his Armenian surname had been thrown on a heap. You might ask why he never told me. You might ask why everyone is always looking behind. Perhaps, 3, because it is all ephemeral, by which I mean to say every one of us gets suckered by the gods. California, for example, the first of the 50 states to honor an insect, a dog-face butterfly with a glide range that can't outspread the topography's shifting golden borders. It's bluish, black, sulfur, yellow, insufficient to hoodwink permanence with its showy display in the chaparral of the southern Santa Anas. Tribe, Colliodini, genus, Z. Eurydice.
Beautiful, thank you. It's so nice to hear you read. It's always such a pleasure for me to interview poets because most of them read beautifully, you know, and
thank you.
Seems to be such a part of it, right? I mean, you know, it's the one thing that, you know, we can't do when we have your book in our hand is read it the way you do. And I know it's we use our own voice, but to me, it's so distinct, the difference between how a poet reads, or let's just talk about your reading right now, and reading, and my reading of your poem. What do you think about that discrepancy or the difference there?
Well, I think one of the possibilities, as the poet is bringing her intention when she reads the poem, that might not be clearly accessible to the listener, Or when the listener or when the reader decides, well, I'm going to read it aloud. They might have to read it several times to themselves, or even if they're reading it to someone else, to really divine what is the poet really trying to get at. I think that readings are really important. I spend a lot of time trying to organize them and think about how my voice can make the work accessible to someone who's never heard it or read it before. So that's a piece, and again, born of my father's emphasis on speaking properly, to try to really make it as accessible to the listener as possible, which someone foreign to the work won't be able to do unless they've had a lot of opportunity to read it and think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you have one more for us, and can you tell us a little bit about that and read that one as well?
Sure. As I said to you earlier, the book is really about both my birth family and my adoptive family. I was able to connect with my birth mother earlier in my life, and she's deceased now, and so this poem reimagines the end of her life. It's called Cord for Beverly. 1. She didn't ask for me when she saw all of it ending. So I don't know how she went out, whether she wept or sang Precious Lord or I Wish I Knew. She didn't ask for me. Perhaps she asked for nothing, nothing being what she once chose. I don't know how she went out, whether dreaming of my father or of the revulsion she had for her own. She didn't ask for me. She could have left one suggestion. She didn't, and maybe she died hard. I don't know how she went out, whether dreaming of me or furious, she was at the end of dreaming and left with one last choice, not to ask. I don't know how she went out, and 2, I must tell you this. I did not go to her before her breathing became shallow, so she never knew what I've become. That as another's daughter, I did long. Still, dressed in apologies and alibis, I did not go to her. My feet stuck in the sludge of my other mother's, don't do this to me. She never knew what I've become. She never knew, and no one's to blame. Why can't every choice be just a choice? Because I didn't go to her, and why not? Continually, and even then, I didn't. What is that? Even I don't know if I've become a liar, always fire in the grate, or someone else's reason to be grateful, but that's not good enough. I did not go to her. Anyone can see what I've become.
Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
Yeah, very beautiful, and what a nice way to cover Your mother. That you said that was your birth mother, who
correct
who you never knew.
Actually, we did meet very briefly and had a very brief relationship, but didn't see each other towards the end of her life, and probably stubbornly on both sides refused to go to the other. So it's a little bittersweet for me, more than a little bittersweet for me to think of it now, and that's what the poem addresses.
Mm. Thank you, and I want to ask you one more question before we go, which I ask everyone, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Right now, I'm reading a very interesting book called, and I hope I pronounced this correctly, Anarcha Speaks, and it's a history in poems by Dominique Christina, and it's the story, a reimagined story, of an enslaved black woman who was subjected to medical experiments by Dr. Marion Sims, and it's fascinating how the author has put these poems together, reimagined how this woman must have felt undergoing these experiments, obviously against her will. So yes, I'm in the process of reading that, and happy I have a chance to give it a shout out to your audience.
Thank you so much. I want to thank you for reading and wish you good luck on your next collection. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.